Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. We're into the fourth week of school closures in our region due to social distancing guidelines. Today, we discuss the challenges and opportunities in this new paradigm of learning. Later in the hour, we talk with the president of the Massachusetts Home Learners Association about what we can learn from families whose children don't attend school. We'll also talk with a psychologist about strategies to keep stress and anxiety in check as we adjust to this new way of learning and living. But first, we welcome Carol Woodbury back to the program. Carol's the superintendent of the Dennis Yarmouth Regional School District. Welcome back, Carol.
Thanks, Mindy.
We should mention we did reach out to the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education to join us this morning, but they declined our invitation. Carol, how much information or direction were you given by the state in those first weeks of school closures, you know, about how long would be closed, about food security, learning for your students? It seemed to happen so suddenly.
It did happen very suddenly, and it was an ever-changing situation. As you may recall, a lot of our school districts on the Cape were thinking about closing for 1 or 2 weeks on the 13th of March, and by Sunday, the governor had come out with his statement that we would be indeed closed for 3 weeks. So that was a little bit challenging because, as you can imagine, we're really not set up for at-home work initially. So there was a lot of scrambling going on, but it was good advice that we got from the commissioner, as he told us that if we hadn't used our 5 snow days, the first 5 days would have to be considered snow days, or when you hit your 185th day, you would be done. And that he felt that in the first couple of weeks that it would be mostly some enrichment activities for kids and just taking care of the learning that had already taken place, kind of deepening that learning and kind of very easy kind of thing to do. So in our school district, we did give our staff the first 5 days to just kind of take it easy and take it all in and figure it out. I was really proud of our staff because they really spent a lot of the week, even though they were technically on snow days, looking through resources online, thinking of ideas of what we could do, and sending those over to our district office where our curriculum directors and special ed director and early learning director were all trying to identify what we could have students do for those first 2 weeks.
Have you been able to keep up the food assistance to DY families, and do you anticipate that will continue?
Yes, I believe it will. The good news was we were in a good position because we already were part of the USDA summer feeding program. And so for us, it was kind of a no-brainer. We, a bunch of folks worked over the weekend, that first weekend, and by Tuesday we had everything up and running. And that was sort of how we've looked at this thing is to try to build from the bottom up. So you start with the basic needs that people have. Certainly food was one of them. And we knew that as time, we needed to get that up and running. But as time went on, we knew we would need it more and more. I believe we're up to close to, I believe we may even be over now, 1,000 a day. And that's 1,000 breakfasts and 1,000 lunches every single day. And our second piece was to then think about our students and our families and our teachers' social emotional status. And I know you're going to probably talk about that a little bit later, but it was really important to us to just like not force everything onto people. There were lots of people that I talked to, like a mom and dad who were both working at home with 4 children who were like, even in the first couple of weeks, just over the top with the idea of having to like now all of a sudden both be trying to work from home, have 4 kids. What were they going to do with them? And so we took all the cues from the commissioner when he said the first 2 weeks, just enrichment and deepening learning of the stuff that's already been taught in school. We took that seriously. Not because we're lazy, not because we don't want our kids to learn, but because we knew that just the social-emotional side of this whole thing was really challenging for kids. And as you can imagine, we have families. Every family is different. We have the single mom with 4 kids. We have the grandparents raising children. We have, you know, families who are trying to work and everything and everything. So it's really, you know, sometimes you just have to step back a little bit. Take a breath and do something and do it well. And there are a couple of things I'm glad we didn't rush into, but I'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
So now we're kind of up to the education piece on Monday. We rolled out our phase 2 learning plan. And I will say one of the things that was a little different, we were able to do that a week earlier with our high school. high school is very different from all the other grades. And if you think about kids that are getting ready to go into the workforce and kids that are ready to go into college and those sorts of things. So the kind of things that they need and the kinds of things that high schools are already doing, like, for example, most of our teachers at the high school level were already using Google Classroom. It wasn't really a hard transition for them. And so they could kind of keep the kids going at a little different pace. Plus, our kids are some taking AP classes. That has an impact on the financial status that they have when they go to into college, because if they do well on their AP exams, sometimes they don't have to take some of the core beginning classes, and that saves their family and them money. So there are a lot of different considerations all throughout this whole thing.
On March 30th, the Massachusetts Department of Education issued guidelines for remote learning. What was the key takeaways there for you?
I guess, you know, initially I would say that the whole thing really was about just maintaining skills. But I think we're at a point now where people are thinking, okay, well, it's going to be a bit more than that, because we don't know how long this is going to go. I mean, we're all very hopeful that we can go back on May 4th. But our piece was just really trying to think about how we can do what we're being asked to do in a way that kind of makes sense for Dennis Sharman. Every school district is different, and one of the things that the commissioner was very concerned about was equity. And we know that there are some parts of our state that don't even have broadband yet. So he knew that every district was going to be in a different place, and he kind of, I think, tried to give us guidelines that would allow us to do what would work best for our districts.
Right. We have Keela calling from New Bedford. Good morning, Keela.
Hi, good morning. So I would just like to share my opinion on what we've been doing for, I've been doing as a student for distance learning. I would just like teachers and school administrators to understand that students are not going to work on the computer for like the 6 or 7 hours that a normal school day is, because that's just not good for anybody. And I think students should lighten the workload for students, or try to assign tasks that students can do off the computer to lessen time on the computer. And I know some schools are doing this already. Like my school, Global Learning Charter Public School, has put out a schedule for students to follow, which only requires students to work from 9 in the morning to noon. And we only have half of our classes each day, and one of them is independent reading time. So we're not on the computer for, like, the full 3 hours. And right. The schedule also allows students to have more time with family or to spend some time outside, which are both important things to balance out with schoolwork.
Yeah. Kale, thank you for calling and sharing your thoughts on that. Independent reading, time outside, time with family, all really important points. Thank you for sharing that with us this morning. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Carol, the state has given districts great flexibility in this time of remote learning. So what are the goals you and your teachers have for this time? What will remote learning look like for the different age groups in the district? You mentioned the high schoolers. You know, what about the younger grades? I think that that would be a challenge.
Yeah. Well, the student who just called in makes a lot of good points, and those were the kind of points that the commissioner made as well. We can't replicate what's going on in a 6 or 7 hour school day. And he recommended that students engage in some kind of learning for about half the school day. So that's exactly what we're doing, too. Well, you'll see if you went to our website, we have from preschool up through grade 12. So it is different from every level. I thought it was kind of neat this week. One of the things that preschool is doing is they're basing their whole week on something called a book called Not a Box. And they can go online and look at that book and so on. And then there's some activities there about collecting boxes around the house and, putting things in them and counting how many things fit in one box and different from in this other box and all that sort of thing. So we're keeping it really developmentally appropriate each step of the way with, you know, a little bit of reading, a little bit of writing, a little bit of math. And one of the things that I said to parents, I did a little video message, is that some of the things that they've been doing at home, you know, learning happens everywhere. And some of the things that our parents are doing at home are just already great things. And there should be. We call them brain breaks at school or movement mm-hmm. breaks. You know, kids do need to get outside and move around. Of course, the rain hasn't helped.
Yeah.
But it is important to, you know, we've all seen some of the videos of the dad exercising with the little toddler trying to do what he's doing and parents making music videos and all sorts of things. So there's learning in all of those things and just spending that time together, cooking in the kitchen, doing all of that. But it does change from grade to grade. And, of course, with our high school kids, we have a similar schedule to what the student talked about. We have four classes in one day and they're 45 minutes apiece. And in the second day, they have their other four classes at 45 minutes apiece. We let kids know when teachers are available and those kinds of things. In elementary, it looks very different from what it's going to look like in high school. But again, talking a lot to parents and giving them sort of the list of what we would consider like student expectations and things like that. One of the other things that we're exploring is how we can do a little bit more of real face-to-face. One of the things that a lot of our teachers and schools did was one of the first things once we got over the food piece was to then reach out to families and make sure that everyone was doing okay, kind of on a one-to-one basis or in an email or whatever it could be. But then the different schools made little videos. Just to tell the kids that we miss them, we are thinking about them, we want them to stay healthy, and taking care of that social-emotional side. It's really important that we stay connected. So we're looking for some ways, too. Some of our students, you know, really need the support of their social workers at school or the guidance counselor. And so we're looking for ways to do that. Some people jumped right in with some of the things like Zoom, and they didn't really spend the time to mm-hmm. think about some of the safety things. But we think we've got that almost worked out. We've been studying that for a bit, and we think that we're going to be able to move forward pretty soon. You know, you just don't, you want to take it slow. I know for parents, they've been thrust into this, and it's hard. But I think, you know, I think the most important thing is that their child feels happy and that they love to learn. So reading together, letting them have time to read, depending on their age. They're not that I want kids in front of a TV all day long either, any more than I want them in front of a computer. But there are some good things on WGBH, and technology can be a challenge as well. And I know you might talk about that later, but
so
I just don't think kids should be on a computer all day long.
Right,
I agree with the student.
Yeah. So how are teachers and staff holding up? You know, they're suddenly learning a whole new way of teaching and new technologies. How is your staff holding up with all of this?
Well, I think they're actually holding up pretty well. I'm sure they're tired. I know we all feel a little tired. But they're almost like excited to be able to just be with their kids. And that's the great thing about teachers. You don't get into this business if you don't love kids and you don't care about everything about them. And so I've seen some pretty amazing things. I saw last night on Twitter, there were a few of our families. One of our teachers at our 4-5 school sent something out for kids that was about angles. And kids were out drawing with the chalk and showing all the different angles and labeling them and sent it out back to the teacher. It was just so cool. And those are the kinds of things we're talking about. Like, let's have learning be fun. It's not sitting at a computer all day. It's not doing worksheets all day. Learning happens all around us. Think about our little babies when they're born, right? They don't come to school having not learned anything. Their parents are such important teachers.
Yeah. So has there been any information from the state on MCAS testing and how seniors will fulfill state graduation requirements?
Well, you know, we're really still waiting for that from the commissioner. One of the things that he had made very clear to us was that he had no real power until he heard from the federal government and from the state government. So he did apply for a waiver with the federal government, and I do believe that that was granted. And now there was another step with our state legislature. I'm not exactly sure where that is in process. But one of the things that he did talk to us about was it depended on when we came back to school. If we come back to school in May, He may want to have our 10th graders be able to take their test, because if they finish it and they do well and they pass, so to speak, then they're done. The other thing is, it's the last bite at the apple for our seniors before graduation if they haven't passed it yet. Not to say that we can't help them get up over that hurdle even after, you know, graduation. We do sometimes have students that take a little bit more time, and we keep them engaged in school so that they can graduate. But for the younger kids, I think he might be leaning toward, you know, either not taking it at all, especially if we come back and we don't have a lot of time. I think he's concerned about the time being spent with their teachers and learning as opposed to in testing. So I don't know yet, but hopefully he'll give us some guidance soon.
Yeah, guidance on that, yeah. Sam, who's in seventh grade, noted, it's confusing and it hasn't gotten any better. How you find the instructions for different days, it's all spread out, and my brother misses his friends. Sam, thanks for sharing that. Has there been an exchange, excuse me, of curriculum and ideas amongst different districts in our region across the street? You know, are districts talking to each other on, you know, what they're doing, you know, so we're not recreating the wheel, so to speak?
Yeah, the superintendents are definitely talking to each other. We have a weekly meeting, virtual meeting. But as you know, we're all differently resourced. So what works well in one district might not necessarily work well in another district. But we are comparing notes and trying to kind of stay together as best we can. But we also have different constituencies. So what parents in one district might want, or teachers, could look very different from what it's expected in another district. So it's not that we're trying to do everything that we're able to do, I think, in every single one of our districts. I won't speak for everybody, but I know that the commitment is there, certainly from the superintendent's level, and I'm sure for their teachers as well.
Yeah, I'm wondering about the equity question. You mentioned the commissioner was concerned about equity. How you know, some kids may not have access to the internet, as mentioned, or, you know, have tablets. How are you dealing with that in your district?
Well, one of the first things that we did was we asked our parents to fill out a survey to let us know if they had internet at home, what kind of devices they had, and things like that. We were fortunate enough that we were fortunate, but there's still a struggle. So in grades 6 through 12, all of our students have their individual iPads. We were originally thinking that, okay, if they have some kind of a device at home, that's probably fine. But the more we listened, what we heard was, well, I have three kids, and if there's only one iPad for everybody, or I need the computer to work. So we kind of went on to what we call Plan B. The problem that we had is we have our third, fourth, and fifth graders also have iPads, but they usually leave them at school, and they're in iPad charging carts overnight that are locked. And so we didn't have the charging blocks for those because we don't use them. Mm. And so right away, I mean, even though we weren't sure we were going to need them or whatever, we ordered the charging blocks. But as you know, right now, sometimes things are hard to get. Right. We ordered from one company. We thought it was a good price, blah, blah, blah. And stuff wasn't coming. So last week we looked at another company. We will have to pay double the price, but we think we'll have them this week. So, you know, it's just a tough situation. So then in addition to that, you're now trying to figure out, okay, and we're supposed to be social distancing because of the way this virus works. We don't know who really has it. So how are we going to successfully do like a drive-up similar to our food thing, but with iPads for kids? And each of our kids are assigned a certain iPad, and as you can imagine, the apps on the iPad are specific to their particular grade. Every summer we collect them and we prepare them over the summer for the next grade. So, you know, a few challenges, but we think we've got it worked out. We bought some plastic bags, and we've got some people who are willing to go in with masks and gloves and things and bag them all up and with some instructions for our families, how to get on, and, you know, that's the route we're going to take.
All right. Carol Woodbury, superintendent of the Dennis Yarmouth Regional School District, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Listeners, are you home with kids trying to juggle a new way of living, working, and learning? How's it going? Join the conversation. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Coming up after break, some tips from those who homeschool and understanding the differences between remote learning and homeschooling. You're listening to The Point, and we are discussing how to keep students engaged and learning as schools remain closed. Despite the differences between remote learning and homeschooling, there are some lessons we can take from those who choose to educate their children at home. Joining us is Bill Heuer. He's director of the Massachusetts Home Learners Association. Hi, Bill.
How you doing, Mindy?
Great. For folks who are not familiar with homeschooling, they might be surprised to hear that remote learning is not homeschooling. And in fact, homeschoolers are being impacted by social distancing guidelines just as everybody else. So can you explain why remote learning is not homeschooling?
Well, actually, that was one of the first things I wanted to talk to you about. Yeah, it's important to know that traditional homeschooling, and it's strange for us to use that terminology these days, but I guess there is traditional homeschooling. It's not synonymous with online learning. Online learning is just one of the vehicles that that we use in home education. But as you had mentioned, those who are used to homeschooling are adapting to a lot of things that are part of their regular life: the closure of libraries, playgrounds, museums, mm-hmm. historical sites, recreational places, co-ops. All of those things are comprise large segments of traditional homeschoolers. The online learning part, ironically, homeschoolers are also adapting to slower access to all those online sites, which have been overwhelmed by the massive influx of new users. So a lot of things are going on in every aspect of home. Yep.
What are the most common inquiries and questions that you're getting at the Home Learners Association since we've seen the school closures?
Well, what happens is we... It depends on whether they're traditionally homeschooled or whether they're just starting out. What we generally get is that those who are just been thrust into this new version of homeschooling, they're looking for some good online sites, curriculums, and maybe some shortcuts on how to deal with their newly at home students.
Yeah. In our current situation, many parents are working and had little time to actually prepare for at-home learning. So what's your advice on making the process as smooth as possible and setting up students for success?
Well, those who have been planning to homeschool for a while and get into it generally research the state and local homeschooling organizations, such as ours, to understand the legal requirements and the processes in their districts. And to come up with a curriculum approach. And they also want to connect with experienced homeschoolers. We always suggest that if people are removing their child from an existing school system versus starting from day one, that they go through what we call a de-schooling process. That can be as much as a month for every year they've been in school. I mean, homeschooling is a family lifestyle. Time is needed for parents and the child to adapt to this change, and it's a major adjustment. Now, obviously, that's not realistic in this environment when it's thrust upon you, but taking time and relaxing a bit is extremely important.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on how parents can help students become more self-motivated or take more ownership for their learning and school-related activities?
Well, I think the first priority has to be establishing a sort of a calm, non-stressful environment. You know, parents are working. They should not obsess over content. Whatever you do in the coming weeks, months, is not going to be the deciding factor in whether or not your child gets into the college of their choice. And we don't recommend obsessing over schedules. Relax, be flexible. Sure, they probably shouldn't sleep till noon every day and stay in their pajamas all day, but a rigid school schedule can really wreak havoc on the entire family. We would suggest let your child help with the daily education plan. Let them make choices, select projects, Parents' job isn't to replace the teacher, but rather to guide, assist, be a mentor, be a responsible parent. Remember, you know, this is new for everyone, the student, the parent, and the teacher. No one's had professional development for all of this. The teacher is just moving existing content through a different format. And the parents, a lot of times, are just expected to comply. So you really need to decide what actually works for your family.
Yeah, I guess in some ways too, your child can help, depending on age, guide with their interests. You know, all of a sudden, you know, it's spring and we're starting to see, let's say, insects coming out. You know, they might be more apt, you know, with that interest to be looking at, you know, learning about a particular bug or, you know, butterfly or what have you. And you could do a lot of things with that. It could be, you know, the books. It could be outside trying to find some of these bugs. There's a lot you can do with that, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we've all heard that, they grow up so fast. Well, this is the time to stop and smell the roses, and maybe literally, you know, go out into that garden, force those forsythias, basically look for the silver lining in this opportunity to spend more time learning something new together. Some project your child has been begging you to do with them for years, some game or puzzle sitting on that shelf from Aunt Lucy that you never got around to doing. There's just so many things to do and be creative. But and then we hear over and over again, read aloud and have the older ones read to the younger siblings. Just so many different things out there. A great chance to take your child to work even while you work at home. They may love to know what you're doing all day.
Yeah, we actually, my husband and I are both working from home, and he's on one end of the dining room table. I'm on the other end, and our almost 5-year-old grandson sets up his workstation sort of between us with his construction paper and what have you. Yeah. So there's a lot of online curriculum out there, and you mentioned that, and I know your organization doesn't recommend curriculum, but are there a number of social media platforms or forums where homeschoolers share thoughts on activities and curriculum? You know, are those forums open to all?
Yes and no. Our website, www.mhla.org, and our face page, MHLA group, along with our sister Facebook page, Mass Home Learners Connection. They're moderated for security, but they're open to those who are homeschooling or interested in homeschooling. So that information is out there. I was going to say, but there's just so much other information. DESE, that you were talking about before, has a website of information that people should take a look at. PBS Kids has a myriad of material and even a daily newsletter to help you. I know that it used to be don't drop the kids in front of the TV all day, but the WGBH World Channel runs 5 hours of classroom for grades 6 to 12 on a daily basis. So you know, if you don't have access to online processes, there is some stuff on TV, ironically, that can fill in some of those gaps. Yeah. It's incredible what's out there. Just about every museum has an online tour. You could take a tour every day and find things that you'd never find out there before. So it's overwhelming. Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say there's some of the zoos. I think it was a Cincinnati. One of the zoos was, you know, doing an online thing, feeding the hippos. We had the New England Aquarium with the turtle. So yeah, there's a lot of those opportunities. So as we're experiencing this at home time with our kids, there may be some parents who are thinking, hey, you know, maybe homeschooling something I want to look at going forward. So in a perfect world, how would a parent or caregiver best prepare themselves and their children for at home learning?
Well, excuse me. There's many components of educational reform these days that have really been ingrained in homeschooling for years. These days, there's a big emphasis on SEL, social emotional learning, to look at the whole child, not just the educational content. And homeschoolers have typically geared their education to the learning style of their child and adapt accordingly. A lot of progressive schools are experimenting with PBL, project-based learning, self-directed learning. And These are all traditional trademarks of homeschoolers. So giving your child some leeway and choosing areas of interest to pursue can be just immensely beneficial to the whole family. One of the interesting things to me is that a number of schools have incorporated that the Google-based Genius Hour, where students are encouraged to work on passion projects and pursue their creativity, curiosity for 1 hour a week in school. And so this is a head shaker for traditional homeschoolers. It should really be the other way around. But it's definitely an avenue to pursue in these times. That let the children be creative, curious, so that they can really learn to enjoy learning.
Yeah. We'll post links to the Massachusetts Home Learners website and their Facebook page at our website, capeandislands.org. Bill Huer, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having us on. Okay.
You bet.
Good luck to you. Bye-bye.
If you're a parent, teacher, or student, we'd like to hear from you. How is this new way of learning working for you and your family? What are the challenges and what has been the unexpected opportunities or joys? 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about continuing learning during school closures this hour. And joining us now is Dr. Laura Markham. She's a clinical psychologist and the author of several books, including Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids, How to Stop Yelling and Start Connecting. Dr. Markham, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So before we talk specifically about learning at home with kids, would you start us off by describing your three ideas that help us improve our relationship with our children?
Yes. The first is that parenting is not a set of strategies. It's a relationship, just like marriage is a relationship, not a set of strategies. So it's connection. Connecting with your child is what gives you influence. The second is that trying to control our kids is bound to fail. You can't control another person. What you can do is use your connection to have influence and coach your child to be their best self. So instead of trying to control them with punishment or even rewards, to coach the child and set up the environment so the child can be successful. Kids want to be successful. They want to be good citizens. They want to be nice to their siblings. They want to please their parents. And if we can coach them instead of trying to control them, all those things are more likely to happen. And the final idea is regulating ourselves, because obviously we can't connect and coach in a productive way unless we're self-regulated. When we're having our own little tantrum, you know, children aren't going to listen to us. Teenagers will rebel. So we set the tone. We make the weather in our homes. Children will always have childish behavior, but we can always control ourselves.
Now, everyone's situation is different, but what advice do you have for parents and caregivers as we embark on this new way of living?
Well, I think the frame for this could be, oh my goodness, this is a terrible tragedy. We're all in danger of dying, right? And that's not going to be helpful to you or your children. There's another frame. And that frame is, wow, we don't get to choose what's happening here. It's a lesson in the fact that sometimes you can't control your environment at all, but we can always control our response. It's almost as if humanity is undergoing a crash course, not just in pandemics, but in managing negative emotions, at what we think of as negative emotions. We think of fear, powerlessness, anger, sadness, and grief, all of those emotions as, quote, negative, unquote. And we are not really taught as children how to handle ourselves emotionally, how to handle our negative emotions constructively. So humanity is now getting a crash course in handling negative emotions. We talk about social-emotional learning and how we want to facilitate that for our children. It's so important, and that's really what's on the table right now for every one of us.
Right. So how important is a schedule, and what are your thoughts on creating one that works for your family?
Oh, I think schedules are very, very helpful, because otherwise every single minute is an invitation to a request for screen time. It's an invitation to a power struggle. It's, well, but then why do we have to get our pajamas, get out of our pajamas today when we didn't have to yesterday, right? So I think schedules are very helpful. I think rigid schedules do not serve people. In fact, if you're rigidly scheduling, you could be interrupting your child's reading or their independent play, both of which are really important things to do, or two siblings playing together in a lovely way, which we want to encourage and not interrupt. But I think in general, having the day blocked out into segments like, we all go to bed by a certain time, otherwise parents will stay up doom surfing, you know, trying to find some information that will make us feel better, which is a losing battle. So parents need to go to bed so that they get up in time to be rested, and also so we all keep our immune system strong. And children need to go to bed for the same reasons, and then all get up at a reasonable time. You don't have to get everyone up at a certain time, but if children are not waking up on their own, then they're not getting enough sleep. So we don't want to wake them up. We want them to wake up on their own, but they need to go to bed early enough to wake up having gotten enough sleep. They're at a good point in their sleep cycle, so they wake up naturally. They're well-rested. They're not cranky with us or each other. So I think that framing of we wake up and then we do certain things. We have breakfast, we get dressed, we work together to tidy up the house if we didn't do that at bedtime or before dinner. And then we do something while our brains are at their freshest. We do some learning, maybe, or some reading, or both. And then we go outside, if there's any way possibly to get your kids outside. And I know in most places you can still go outside. And so to take your kids outside, even while you're social distancing from other families, they need the fresh air in order to stay less stressed, we all do, mm-hmm. in order to sleep better at night, in order to keep the immune system strong. We all need fresh air. We all need nature, which has a positive effect on our immune system. So getting kids outside, getting kids moving, getting everyone in the family laughing lowers your stress level. And then by the time you come in and it's lunchtime, you've already accomplished two really important things in your day.
Yeah, I was going to say that lots of research about laughter. Laughter is what they say, good medicine, right? I mean, it really does help. 866-99
chemistry.
Yeah,
it actually changes the body chemistry. It reduces the stress hormones. It makes the immune system work better. It helps us all with our levels of anxiety. And anxiety is just another word for fear, right? We're all carrying a tremendous load of fear if we're paying any attention to what's going on. And children pick up that fear from us. So very important to use the tools that we know about to reduce the stress level we're all carrying.
Right. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Across the country, parents and kids are navigating this new reality. And as you mentioned, it's leading to a lot of stress and anxiety. So if you feel yourself getting anxious as you're interacting with your child, what are some strategies to help us regulate that emotion in the moment?
Okay. In the moment, your best strategy is to not act while you're angry. To just keep monitoring your own mood. And it may feel it happens all at once, like you go from just being calm to being outraged at your child for something just in a moment. But really, it doesn't. It happens more slowly than that as you get increasingly cranky or irritated or annoyed. And then you burst out yelling at your kid. So in that moment, if you're yelling, shut your mouth. Like, give yourself a piercing on your tongue if you have to. Shut your mouth. Turn away. You're not losing face. You're modeling anger management. Very important for children to witness. Because your kids will get angry, too. You're modeling how to manage it. You stop in mid-sentence if you have to. Turn away. Take a few deep breaths. And as soon as you can speak reasonably, you turn back and you say, I am too angry. You talk about this right now. We'll talk about this when we all calm down. In the meantime, I expect you to be on your best behavior. And you walk away and you breathe deeply and you shake out your hands and you give yourself an alternate thought, because the thought that's in there that's making you angry is something like, these kids never listen to me, or he's always so mean to his sister, or whatever. So just use an antidote, like, we're all stressed at the moment. He needs my help. He's having a hard time, right? Kids are having a hard time right now. We need to remember that they can't articulate that, so they act it out.
Many parents are concerned about their children falling behind academically during this time. And I know you're not an educator, but how would you respond to parents who are feeling anxious about this?
I would say that we need to pull the camera back and look at the bigger picture here. We're worried about our children falling behind because we're worried about our children's success in life, right? What if they take the standardized tests and they have fallen behind? But there's something that's actually... So first of all, about the standardized tests, we need a social response to this, a societal-level response, not a response just for a few kids, because there are many children affected here who won't be able to, quote, keep up with the normal schedule because there's no normality. It's a pandemic, right? But I would also say let's ask ourselves as parents, no one else is really the person who looks after our child's well-being, and we are responsible for that. So let's ask ourselves, what does our child most need at this moment? Do they most need not to fall behind on the standardized tests? Or do they most need to feel safe? I would argue that children don't feel, many children, and I talk to parents all day, every day, many children don't feel safe right now. And our most important job as parents is to help our children feel safe. Getting into power struggles with them about their math homework is not the way to make them feel safe. Yelling at them to sit down and focus is not going to help them feel safe. Kids can't focus when they're anxious. So what we need to do is use the tools that we know will help them feel less anxious. We talked about getting kids laughing, roughhousing with them. We've not talked about this, but another thing that really helps kids is art. So playing with clay with your hands, other kinds of messy play when they're little, and running around outside, we already talked about that, and also talking with kids every single day, having a check-in alone with each child where they get to feel like the center of your world. No matter how many children you have, that child for this moment is the center of your world. And you say, I love you so much. I am so lucky to be your mom or your dad. How are you doing, sweetie? Tell me what's going on for you. And if your child can't really articulate it, you can say, are you feeling happy? Are you feeling sad? Are you feeling disappointed? Are you feeling excited? And you could even show them, if they're young, pictures of little faces. You can find these online, a smiley face, a frowning face, a worried face. Let your kids talk to you. They may say, I'm worried you're going to die. I'm worried grandma's going to die. I'm worried we'll run out of toilet paper and then what will happen? Whatever they say, acknowledge that and say, wow, that's a big worry. And then reassure them that A, you're keeping them safe. B, you will handle whatever happens, like the toilet paper, you'll figure it out. And C, give them some empower them a little bit to deal with the worry. So to say something like, you know, sweetheart, I hear how worried you are about me, so I want to reassure you I am taking such good care of me. My immune system is strong. I'm eating well. I wash my hands about every 5 minutes. Our home is safe. We're really careful not to bring germs in the house the minute we come home. We all wash our hands. We are very careful with any groceries that come into the house to wipe things down. We social distance, we limit the number of things that come into our house. I am really taking good care of myself. You do not have to worry about me. It's my job as the parent to take care of you, and I am doing everything to keep myself safe and to keep you and your siblings safe. And right now, Grandma, we're worried if Grandma, let's say, doesn't live with you. Of course, we all worry about Grandma because she's older, but you know what? Grandma is taking really good care of herself. And to keep Grandma's spirits up, let's Zoom with her, Skype with her, or FaceTime with her today, and you'll be reassured to see how well she's doing, and she will love seeing your beautiful, smiling face.
Many parents are trying to balance working from home while keeping their children engaged, and they're wondering about screen time. Should we be concerned about how much time we're letting our kids sit in front of the screens, or is this a moment when we say, do what you need to do to get by?
I think there's a happy medium there. I think that, in general, guilt is not that useful a motivator. You know, if it motivates you to change things, fine. But for parents who are at their wits' end, worried sick about losing their jobs and trying to hang on to that paycheck, and they have to work and they don't have a choice. I talked to one mom the other day. She has 5 children. She doesn't have a partner with her at this point, and she is having to work every morning from 8:30 to noon. That it's not negotiable. So I said, okay, start a list in the morning, you know, make a little check-off list that the kids have to do, and then they can sit down and have an hour or two of screen time after that, and put the 10-year-old in charge of the little ones and give the 10-year-old some guidance so they're not an autocrat. But, of course, don't feel guilty for 1 minute. Your job is to keep food on the table. If they have 2 hours of screen time during a pandemic, it's not going to rot their brains, for goodness sakes. It's fine. Now, if you let kids be on the screen for all day, every day, what ends up happening is kids get cranky and unhappy. It's not good for their brains or their bodies, obviously. So you don't want it to be all day, every day. But you certainly can use screens, you can say, also as a reward. At 3:00 every day, after we've taken time to be outside for our bodies, taken time to have a family dance party, taken time to learn, to do a little lesson, or to do reading where everybody reads to each other in the family, or whatever, depending on your family. And then at 3:00, they get some screen time while you get a little moment to listen to a guided meditation, to take a shower in peace, whatever it is you need to get dinner on the table later. Fine. That's great. Do not torment yourself about this. It's a time-limited period. Heaven hopes this pandemic, it is a pandemic, and we have worse problems than having our kids have a little screen time. And I would just say, for those of you who don't know me who are listening here, I'm not a fan of screen time in general, but really, it's a pandemic. All bets are off.
Yeah. We have just about a minute left, and I have a lot more questions, but I thought we could take this minute just to give any other advice that you would like to give to parents. Or we have a lot of grandparents raising grandchildren who are, you know, in similar situations. Just your final thoughts.
My final thought is to take care of you. You set the emotional tone in your home. And right now, you, the parent or grandparent, you are under tremendous stress, emotionally, financially, logistically. Take care of you. Keep yourself resourced physically so you don't get the virus. Keep yourself resourced emotionally so you can be emotionally generous to your child when they act up, which they will. Just remember that what your child needs now more than anything is your love and adoration and approval so they feel safe. They need to know you're their rock. Take care of you.
Laura, thanks for taking time to talk with us today. We really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Dr. Laura Markham is a clinical psychologist and author of several books, including Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids, How to Stop Yelling and Start Connecting. We'll post links with more information on her books and her blog, AHA Parenting, at our website, capeandislands.org. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.